Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focused on Albany. I'm your host, Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Bob Port, former investigative editor of the Times Union, and he's here to talk about the latest developments in Albany's corruption scandals. So when all of this news broke, Bob, were you surprised?
I can't use the word surprise for my reaction, but I was apoplectic, is a fair word to say, when I read the criminal complaint that was filed by the U.S. attorney from Manhattan, Preet Bharara. And it really, we all knew this case was in the works. We all knew something was probably coming. When it finally hit, when I read the details of what they had gathered in their investigation, I was shocked at the arrogance of the people involved. This is, of course, based on allegations that will have to be proven in court, but they're pretty well backed up by the testimony of an FBI agent, and there were many agents, including IRS agents involved. What it reveals is a government that is for sale. New York State government is for sale. This doesn't come as a surprise to me because we've seen this year after year after year for more than 10 years in New York State government. But what was troubling about this was that it reached deep into the executive branch of the state government. The main defendant in this case, Joe Prococo, is the closest personal friend and aide of Governor Andrew Cuomo. Another individual, Alain Calieros, the president of SUNY Polytechnic, recently created division of the State University of New York. And then it involves what I would call lobbyists and business people who were involved in an alleged bribery and extortion scheme. It is stunning to see members of the administration of a governor who promised to, quote-unquote, clean up Albany, who stood on the steps of the Tweed Courthouse in New York City years ago and declared, I'm the guy who's going to come to the state capitol and fix these problems we've had for so long. Well, he didn't do it. And it turns out that his closest friend and aide was involved in a scheme, again, these are allegations, to enrich himself and his wife. And it's beyond disappointing, which was the word the governor used to describe his reaction. It's disgusting, and it's despicable, and it's reprehensible, and it makes a mockery of New York State on the national stage in terms of how our government polices its ethics. That was my reaction.
There's a lot of people and a lot of issues involved. There's the Buffalo Billion and what's going on out there, what's going on here in Albany. So from your perspective, can you break it down so that people will understand the scope of this?
Sure, let me try. I think there were, in the federal case that was brought, there were two main elements, two main collections of actions by people. The first was a scheme alleged, again, by Joe Prococo, the aide to the governor for many years, his closest friend, like a brother to him, as he has said, was involved in an effort to collect money and a no-show job, to create a no-show job for his wife on behalf of a Syracuse-based developer that wanted to build a natural gas electricity generation plant in the Hudson Valley. The alleged amount that he pocketed was $315,000, and the details of it are all laid out in the complaint, which anyone could find on the internet using Google. Go to the New York Times, which posted the criminal complaint. The other main element involves the Buffalo Billion and the construction of a $750 billion solar energy plant, a manufacturing plant for solar energy panels for Solar City, the big solar panel plant run by Elon Musk, and the efforts by Alain Calleros, the president of SUNY Polytechnic, Dr. K, as he's referred to in the complaint, a nickname that was used for him, and a gentleman named Todd Howe, who was acting as a lobbyist, and efforts by them to rig the bids for the construction of that plant, which was paid for by the taxpayers of New York, to steer it specifically to a major Buffalo construction company run by Louis Simonelli. And that, I have to say, to me is the most shocking part. What Joe Prococo allegedly did is sort of typical pay-to-play politics in Albany. Oh, I need to get a job for my wife. Well, if you give this much money to my employer, I'll use my influence to get you what you want. In the case of the Buffalo Billion, Alain Calleros worked with the other people involved in the Simonelli construction company to rig the RFP, the request for proposal that begins a project of this nature, to assure that it can only go to Louis Simonelli's construction company. Excuse me. And the complaint details emails that are all obtained by the FBI, where these people go back and forth and structure this document, which is going to determine who can apply to get this incredibly profitable job, such that only Simonelli and his company could get it. First, the RFP was written so that the construction company had to have been in business in the area for 50 years, and that left only Simonelli. And they pulled some other little stunts to Simonelli regarding audited financial statements of the bidder. So in the end, only Simonelli could have gotten this job, and that was all orchestrated by Todd Howe, who, I should point out, has already pled guilty to the charges against him, and by Alain Calleros. You know, I want to add something else to this whole episode. It's been written about by journalists in New York. One in particular, the Investigative Post, a nonprofit website based in Buffalo, has written about this. They contacted Calleros and said, hey, wait a minute, this RFP says 50 years. That means only Simonelli could have gotten it. And Mr. Calleros, in an interview, claimed, oh, that was a typo. That was a mistake. It should have been 15 years. Well, no, it wasn't. We can now see reading this complaint. It was deliberately changed to be 50 years so that huge contract, the $750 billion solar energy plant in Buffalo, could only go to Simonelli. What it tells me and what it would tell any journalist in New York is that Alain Calleros is a liar. He is a liar. And he is actually willing to go on the record in interviews and make statements to journalists that he, based on what I read in this complaint, which is tied to his own emails, he's willing to simply make false statements. So, you know, this was written about. The governor's administration could have responded to this earlier, but they didn't. They didn't. They just brushed it off. They blew it off. Furthermore, the complaint describes an elaborate scheme where Calleros and SUNY set up not-for-profit corporations that were specifically structured to make it extremely difficult, if not impossible, for anyone to really monitor what was going on. And I find this entire pattern of behavior to be, again, I don't want to go on and on, but it's reprehensible and it's despicable and it's disgusting and it's illegal and it's criminal and it's wrong. And we've known about this for years. So now we're all going to have to wait as these people go to apparently a federal criminal trial.
Now, as you and I and many people know, that the U.S. attorney has been looking at what's going on in Albany with a fine-tooth comb for a couple of years. And we also know that Andrew Cuomo is a micromanager, or simply put, he's a control freak. Ultimately,
yes.
Did you think that if he knew all this stuff, why wasn't he afraid of what the U.S. attorney was going to find? I find this really interesting.
Yes, well, this is a big question, and the governor has essentially said, he hasn't exactly said, but he has essentially implied that he didn't know, and that as he began to learn of this, he was disappointed and concerned. He's appointed a former prosecutor, Bart Schwartz, at taxpayer expense to look into all this. But now that we've seen this criminal complaint, it defies credulity. It just simply is unbelievable to any intelligent, reasonable person that the governor could have been totally, completely unaware of all these things occurring. Maybe he was. And if he was, then he was incompetent. And he was incapable of controlling his own staff. We're talking about Joe Percocuomo's campaign manager in the last election in New York. Mm-hmm. He didn't know that Joe Prococo's wife was working for someone for some $90,000 a year. He didn't know? How is that possible? I just don't understand. Reporters have begun to confront him on these questions. But, frankly, he makes it very difficult for anyone to confront him on any question. And he has a very well-paid staff, what I would call a propaganda ministry of information specialists who just put out spin anytime a journalist poses a question and hopes to get an answer. So the governor has indicated he didn't know. Don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Now, when you said he's got a good propaganda outfit
ministry.
In Auburn ministry, there's so many journalists out there who are at the Capitol every day. They try to do their job. Why wasn't this uncovered? Is it them, or is it the governor's office?
Well, there are a lot of journalists in Albany, and a lot of really good ones, too. And they have tried to cover it, and they have covered it. And they've tried again and again to get information. In this particular case, the Albany Times Union, my former newspaper, foiled a lot of the emails that we're now seeing splayed in a criminal complaint from a U.S. attorney, but they were denied. Why? Because, oh, it's part of a criminal investigation, which is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous that a governor's office would conceal information that was about to be used in a criminal complaint against its own former aide. Anyway, they have tried, but maybe not hard enough. And, you know, I don't see – there certainly are several journalists in Albany who have consistently, relentlessly pounded on these issues and dug into them, this particular scandal. But maybe not enough. I just am aghast at how many people. I moved to Albany a little over 10 years ago, and the numbers of people who've been indicted and charged with crimes, people who were involved in the legislature, who were at high levels of state government, it's astonishing. And this is there were 10 people charged, either by federal charges or there were parallel state charges this week. But journalists, I mean, I think many of them are somewhat living in a dream world where somehow this is just routine business. And you read stories and you watch interviews on TV. And if you live here and you watch these things closely, you kind of get the feeling that journalists sort of accept this, oh, well, another month, another set of indictments in Albany, here's the story, and they express shock and amazement, but they don't pound their fists on the table the way I think someone with some moral backbone would upon seeing things like this again and again and again. And I'm equally disappointed in the lack of success by good government groups that have consistently worked, and I have the utmost respect for them, to advance ethics reform of all kinds in Albany. And every time another of these cases appears on the front page, they renew their calls for the same things they've been calling for over a decade. And it's reached a point, I think, where the public has just become numb to all these things, and no one is getting as upset as I am. It's why I want to leave New York. It's one of the big reasons. The economy is another. I think it's just a very frustrating failure of a place to live and work.
So what do you think about the ramifications for the legislative session that's going to start in January?
It's a good question. It's difficult for me to imagine how any normal state legislature could convene as ours will in January and not hold hearings on this case, not immediately begin introducing legislation that puts in place measures to guarantee it can't happen again. And yet, if they actually do those things, that'll be big news, because that's not how the New York legislature reacts to these things. I fear we're going to see just another legislative session after an election. It remains to be seen what leadership will emerge from that, what parties will control the state Senate, for example. But I certainly am not holding my breath for some sort of new initiative within the New York State Legislature. I think they're going to just put their heads down and try to pretend it never happened. And they'll probably do this even while more headlines will emerge as these defendants either plead guilty or begin the process of going to trial.
Now, the one particular day I'm looking forward to is the State of the State. What's Cuomo going to say? That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it is. I agree with you. It's hard to imagine how he could ignore this, but it cuts so close to home that I don't know how he can deal with it.
Right.
I think what would really be inspiring is to see him seriously begin to do what he promised to do so many years ago when he first ran for governor, and to propose a whole array of ethics reforms into state law when he introduces the budget, when he gives the state of the state. But he kind of did that last year, and it all fell by the wayside, even as the former leaders of the legislature were being convicted and sentenced to federal prison. So,
right.
I mean, if something good happens, really good, this year out of this, it'll be the first time I've ever seen it happen.
So
I hate to be pessimistic.
Right.
But I am. I'm very pessimistic about New York.
This is going to be a story that's going to continue through the election into the session next year. So, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts as this whole story evolves. So, Bob, thank you for being on Focus on Albany. I look forward for you to share your thoughts again. And do you have any final thoughts at this point?
No. I just hope that more information comes out about this. I mean, it's very obvious that we need to, the economic development arms of New York State, and that to some degree includes SUNY, needs to stop setting up shell nonprofit corporations to cover up normal state activity. The state controller should have had authority to monitor these contracts. That authority was taken away a few years ago by the legislature at the governor's behest. That problem can get fixed, but I almost just don't know where to begin. What needs to be done is the same things everyone has been saying for so many years. We need to close the LLC loophole. We need to improve JCOPE, the ethics body in New York, so that what it does is more transparent and public and cannot be blocked by people with a personal interest. We need to throw out the Board of Elections and replace it by a nonpartisan professional entity. It would be great to see some form of public campaign financing that removes the power of money from politics as it now exists in New York, which is essentially unregulated and out of control. We need to amend the state constitution and have a convention to do so, to force through some of these things that the legislature doesn't have the courage and the ability to act. There need to be term limits on the leaders of the legislature to limit their power, and on and on the list goes. So,
So this is a story that will be continued over the next few months. So, Bob, thank you for being on Focus on Albany.
Sure.
I look forward to your thoughts as we progress with this issue. And thank you, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. And if you have a comment or criticism about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany and share your thoughts. Thank you, Bob, and thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Hello?